Ralph Ellenwood from Tucson for Mr. Mattia. Your Honor, this is a case where there's plenty of error and mistake to go around. The two lawyers in the case, the judge, failed to catch the problem with the official detention adjustment until 9.5 months after Mr. Mattia had served the sentence and been discharged from the Bureau of Prisons. As is clear from the transcript of the disposition hearing, the intent of everyone, the judge, defense, Mr. Mattia, and the government, was that Mr. Mattia would go to Butner and receive treatment. Unfortunately, that never happened, and it became an impossibility 9.5 months later, even though the court sentenced him then again to an additional 22 months of official detention adjustment. So the expectation of the parties and the expectation of Mr. Mattia was never realized. Why the Bureau of Prisons didn't let anybody know that they weren't going to send him to Butner or couldn't send him to Butner or whatever the problem was, and simply let him serve 9.5 months and knock him out the door, none of us will ever know. The problem here is that this really isn't a clerical error. It is a judicial error in the end. Yes, Your Honor.
I was just having trouble tracking the way you characterized what happened. You said he sentenced him to it sounded to me like a different sentence. And it seemed to me this case was all about a clerical error and making sure that the sentence that was imposed was the one that was carried out. Now, you say it wasn't a clerical error. It was a judicial error.
Well, referring the court to page 6 of the disposition hearing transcript, starting at the bottom of the page, line 25, it seems to me that what happened is when the court said the court's sentence is a 24-month sentence commencing from today's date, a sentence of incarceration of 24 months commencing on today's date, that's what the clerk picked up.
But that's not everything that was said, though. The clerk picked up the wrong message, according to the judge. What if the clerk had said, we're sentencing you to life? Written in the judgment, we're sentencing you to life imprisonment without possibility of parole.
Well,
would that stand over what the judge actually pronounced orally?
No, it wouldn't. But what the judge pronounced orally was a 24-month sentence.
Well, you're reading very selectively. There was other things said in there, weren't there?
There was indeed, Your Honor. There was discussion right from the beginning of the hearing about the problem with the official detention adjustment. But I think the question here is whether 9.5 months later a judicial error in the pronouncement of sentence can be treated as a clerical error.
You're characterizing this as a judicial error, and I can't figure out why. That's not what the judge tells us it was.
You've said at page 5, I'd request that the court phrase the sentence in such a way that it makes clear that it is the intent of the court that he receive the 24-month sentence and that the rest of it is adjustments anticipating credit. And you don't think that the statement that he made just before the one you read, where he said, based on the fact defendant has admitted the allegations, it is ordered that his probation be revoked, it is further ordered that he be sentenced to 24 months of custody plus 651 days of official detention adjustment. That tracks what you were asking him to clarify.
And that was in response to the soliloquy that the judge engaged in at the beginning of the hearing, expressing concern that in past sentencing that he had experienced, that there had been a problem between the Bureau of Prisons calculating what the time credit was and what the intention of the court was with regard to the credit. Ms. Hansen, the prosecutor, also expressed concerns, but
fine, but that's not helping me understand what you understood 24 months of custody plus 651 days of official detention credit to mean.
So that he would receive the minimum sentence to allow him to go to Butner,
right, 24,
North Carolina, for treatment.
He needed 2 years.
He needed 2 years to go to Butner. And the intent of everyone was that he get the minimum sentence possible for him to receive the treatment at Butner. What happened is that none of that happened.
Well, he didn't get – I understand he didn't get the treatment, but that wasn't something that the court could order. That was at the discretion, was it not, of the Bureau of Prisons, whether he got that?
Well, I think that the judgment said that he should go to Butner.
He should, but, I mean, it doesn't – can the court direct that he actually be put there?
No, sir.
That is my point. So what the judge was trying to do was set a circumstance where he would qualify for it.
That's correct. That was the intent of everyone, okay, including Mr. Mattia.
So is it your argument that he got 2 years and that was it, and that because of the credits, he doesn't have to serve a full 2 years?
My argument is that because of the way that this sentence apparently was pronounced, and I think the problem lies at page 6, line 25, and thereafter, that Mr. Mattia didn't get what he and the government thought was going to happen.
Didn't
here.
Get what? He didn't get into the treatment program.
He didn't get into the treatment program.
But the question
program,
is, but, okay, but I just want to understand what you, in terms of time served, the time served was structured so he would get that result. I understand that, and I know there's a consideration that you're raising here about whether he got the treatment that he thought he was going to get. But in terms of the sentence that was imposed, which was structured to make that treatment option available, what did you understand the amount of prison time your client was being sentenced to?
24 months.
Okay. And did he serve 24 months?
He served 9.5 months. What that represented in terms of a sentence with time credits, I'm not sure. But clearly it wasn't 24 months. The problem here, though, is that there was a substantial upward departure from the sentencing range of 3 to 9 months specifically to give him the treatment at Butner, which everyone, including Mr. Mattia, believed that he needed. And
can you explain how it works? I don't understand. I've read the remarks of the district court saying I agree with that, and I got the impression, as you've confirmed, you couldn't order him directly into that. That's the Bureau of Prisons' determination. What was the next step that should have been taken once the sentence was imposed, just administratively, to make sure that he did get considered and put into that program?
I'm not sure that there was a step that the court or counsel could have taken had I known, and I didn't because Mr. Mattia didn't tell me, that he had not been sent to Butner. I'm sure that I would have tried to do something. That is my error, I guess, as much as anybody's. I probably should have checked and made sure he didn't. I didn't. Mr. Mattia didn't think to let me know. The problem is that 9.5 months later, it was all defeated anyway, and the whole purpose of the upward departure was destroyed. There, at that point, there was never going to be enough time to send him to Butner. And it just seems like on jurisdictional grounds to go back and try to adjust something and leave out part of the consideration, which was to go to Butner, and then focus and say, well, this is just the sentence that was imposed, and it's just a clerical error, and therefore you just have to serve the rest of the time, kind of defeats the whole purpose of what was trying to be accomplished at the front end.
Well, did he serve the sentence that the judge imposed?
At the time he was released?
Did he ever serve the sentence that the judge imposed?
He's serving it right now.
The court. Well, you are in error in one respect, Mr. Ellingwood, in your statement that Mr. Mattia has served the sentence that the court imposed on him. He's not served that sentence. That sentence was never properly recorded in the written judgment that was issued by the court. It excluded the 651 days of official detention adjustment that the court imposed. So he served 24 months, but there were almost 22 other months he was supposed to serve that he never served because of an error, a clerical error in the judgment. Then he explains how it happened. Another judge signed it. The prosecutors never reviewed it. But it seems that this is a classic case under Allen for correcting the sentence. I mean, the sentence that is applicable is the sentence pronounced by the judge. And here we have the judge saying it didn't get written down right.
And my position is it didn't get written down right because of the way it was pronounced orally, and that's judicial error, not clerical error. May I reserve the last 30 seconds?
Surely. We'll hear
from
you, Your
Honor.
May it please the Court, my name is Bruce Furry. I'm an assistant United States attorney on behalf of the government. I would submit to you that, in fact, this is simply a classical case of mistakes for which Rule 36 was designed, that there were some errors, clerical errors, as the judge specifically found, which confused things, but that the oral pronouncement of sentence, as Judge Trott has pointed out from the record, is very clear.
Did this defendant suffer any disabilities or serve any kind of time in excess of what he would have otherwise served, or was he deprived of something that he might have otherwise gotten had this been done right in the first place?
It's never been argued that he has, and I'm not aware of any. I think that part of the problem here is that Mr. Ellenwood...
It was just argued that, yes, he was deprived of the opportunity to go to the treatment program, which was very first and for, you know, very upfront in the sentencing.
The word that you used, opportunity, is critical here.
Right, but I mean, if the clerical error, in effect, caused the Bureau of Prisons not to view this as a sentence that qualified him for the
Well, we don't know exactly why the Bureau of Prisons did not send him at the final hearing.
Then you can't say that he was not prejudiced. He may have been.
All that he bargained for was the potential to go. It was always understood that it was within the discretion.
Was deprived.
We understand that, but if the sentence doesn't track it in a way that makes it that the Bureau of Prisons receives, doesn't put him on the qualified list, he never gets discretion exercise because it's not...
That is the kind of factual argument which should have been presented below. Mr. Ellenwood, in the final hearing, indicated that it was unclear to him whether there was a necessity by Mr. Mattia to apply, which he never did, or whether the Bureau of Prisons simply said, well, in our discretion, we don't think you're a good candidate, so we're not taking you.
So the record doesn't tell us one way or the other what the cause was.
Exactly. All that we have is the fact of the undisputed a transcript of the original disposition hearing in which the judge very clearly says, this is a recommendation. This is on that very same page 6 where the judge says, it's further ordered that he be sentenced to a period of 24 months of custody plus 651 days of official detention adjustment to take care of all of the kind of pretrial time while they're negotiating the plea, and is the further recommendation of the court that he be designated to serve his sentence at the sex offender facility in Butner.
Should we send this back somehow to determine whether he suffered some prejudice as a result of this event? I mean, it seems the government would want him in this program, too.
The only way at this point that would be possible would be to add...
More time.
And that, I think, would put us in real double jeopardy questions, whereas... In this situation, where we were, in fact, simply correcting the clerical error, the failure to include the 651-day annotation, it was done exactly as Rule 36 contemplated.
Can I ask a procedural question? In civil cases, when a court enters judgment, the parties are given the opportunity, or certainly have the opportunity, to look at the court's judgment to make sure it conforms to what they understood the court's ruling to be, and if there's an objection, you make the objection. Is there any, in practice, is there any comparable provision here? I mean, those of you who were there in front and understood what the intent was, looking at this judgment, would have concluded that, wait, whoops, that's not quite right.
Well, it was not my case. I've picked it up on appeal. But the judgment, the disposition, is distributed to the parties. In this particular case, Ms. Hansen, who was the prosecutor, indicated that through some glitch within our office, she did not get to review it as she typically does. And it's also unusual in that typically the sentencing judge is the one who signs the judgment and commitment, or in this case, the disposition order. Apparently, Judge Zapata was absent for some reason, and Judge Jorgensen signed it in his behalf. So there was another unusual situation where the typical checks and balances didn't pick it up. But there is no reason to believe that Mr. Ellenwood did not receive a copy of the judgment. He's not alleged that. I'm not know if he's going to say that or not. So it's simply one of those, as I say, I think this is a classic case of what Rule 36 was designed to deal with. Yes, errors happen. People are fallible. But none of the kinds of interests which are behind the double jeopardy clause are implicated in simple error correction. There was no increase in the sentence. It was the intention of the parties that there be eligibility, which required a minimum of 24 additional months beyond the time that he'd already served, and that's exactly what he got.
Well, would he have gotten that if the judge knew he wouldn't be eligible for Butner?
No, the entire purpose was to at least make him eligible, but there was no promise. That's why the judge phrased it, actually, amongst all the people in court there, as a recommendation, because he has no authority to direct the Bureau of Prisons to actually put someone into a particular
facility. That isn't quite my question. If the judge knew that he wasn't going to get to Butner, what would the sentence have been?
If he knew that he was not going, then I assume that it would be someplace within the guidelines suggested.
And which would be?
I think it was the top was about 9 months or so.
Now, in hindsight, we know he didn't get to Butner, and we know that he wouldn't have gotten a two-year sentence if the judge knew he couldn't get to Butner. Why doesn't the government do a little equity here?
Well, I think that the government has clean hands, Your Honor. All that was bargained for was eligibility, and that's what was given to him. It was a clerical error which made that impossible, perhaps because, and we don't know for sure, his own failure to apply.
What happens when you're made eligible? Typically, how do the mechanics work? I'm now eligible to go to Butner. What do I have to do?
Honestly, Your Honor, I can't tell you. I do appeals, and I've only been in the U.S. Attorney's Office a little over a year. So the background of these particular procedures, I'm afraid I can't inform you. I can attempt to find out and supplement the brief if that would be helpful.
Mr. Ellingwood might. No, we'll ask him.
You know, following up on Judge Fletcher's question, if we go back to page 4 of the transcript, you're correct that the court recognizes that it's BOP that has the discretion. And then the court says, if it doesn't happen once he gets there, I assume that violates the intentions of everyone here in terms of what the sentence should be. And he could be brought back for a resentencing based on that. I think that is true, but I'm not entirely sure either, because we always lose jurisdiction over a case after very few days in terms of having to deal with a change of sentence. That suggests that the court had in mind making some adjustment, and yet when because of the glitch, he doesn't get it. He leaves him with the two years, which is a bit troublesome.
Well, again, the premise for that would be that there was something that Mr. Mattia had done whatever was necessary, and honestly, as I say, I can't tell you what that is, but it was suggested in the final hearing where the Rule 36 motion was granted, that there was some kind of application that it was incumbent upon him to make that he did not make. And so because that particular factual issue was not something that was considered important or argued as a basis for denying the Rule 36 motion, it simply was not developed as to whether or not it was in fact required of him to do something, or this was simply the kind of ordinary discretionary decision which the Bureau of Prisons is entitled to make. On that same page 4, as you see there, the court is saying that when they go to the Bureau of Prisons, they recalculate and then they subtract the sentence of official detention. And so throughout this, the judge is recognizing, and again, it's specifically articulated in terms of him making a recommendation only that the man go to Butner, which is all that he could do.
Why is the other thing that confused me was this terminology they use, sort of like trying to guess what the Bureau of Prisons is going to calculate as time served. To what extent do you think that has complicated this plus 651 days of official detention adjustment? That was the judge was expressing some concern about how the BOP calculates that.
Well, this
is there a better way to frame a sentence than that terminology that would avoid problems?
I don't believe so. I think that this was what should have been done, because this official detention credit time, as explained in the disposition report, is actually relying on the specific language in the guidelines, which is, I don't want to mislead you as to the proper citation, but it specifically takes you to, I think it's E1, mm-hmm. Which talks in terms of the fact that when there has been predisposition incarceration of official detention, in this case that was true of Mr. Mataya, because he'd been held initially by the Tohoton Nation police, and then the case was transferred and ultimately resolved by a plea agreement, the guidelines specifically require that kind of statement be included, so that on the one hand it is recognized that he has served this amount of time, and that, as the judge did here, what he actually intends from the disposition 2 years from today, as the judge said, is what will actually be considered as a real sentence.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
To answer the court's questions, I did get a copy of the judgment. I assume the judge got one, and I assume the U.S. attorney got one.
So
that is standard.
Did you look at it? Did you see any discrepancy there?
I went back and looked at my file. I did indeed look at it. I had checked it, but for some reason I didn't pick up the problem. You know, I just didn't do it.
All right. And now, you represented this client. Tell me, how do the mechanics work? You made him eligible to go to Butner for this treatment facility. You said, I think that the proposal for him to go to Butner is the best thing in Mr. Mattia's case. So mechanically, then, how does that work? What does he have to do to apply and get accepted?
As far as I know, he does nothing. I've had two prior clients sent to Butner, and they both just gone. There was no application. There was no nothing. That what we needed was the judge to make the recommendation that they go to Butner, and then the Bureau of Prisons would act on that. I'm unaware.
How would that recommendation have been communicated?
It's in the sentence.
Yeah, but you didn't see it in the sentence, right?
It is in the sentence, Your Honor. It's in the original sentence.
Oh, okay.
What's not in the sentence is the official detention adjustment language.
So then your understanding is he has to do nothing and you have to do nothing on his behalf.
That's my understanding.
The Bureau of Prisons gets that and they react to what's in the judgment and either accept him or not.
Yes. And Mr. Mattia is a Native American. He's really, as is kind of typical, unassertive about things. And
so is it fair to say then that the regular practice would suggest that they decided not to accept him?
No.
I mean, if you don't have to do anything.
I don't think that is.
Why wasn't he accepted?
I think the more important thing is, why wasn't he just transferred? And that I don't know. And the only thing I can think of is that the way that the sentence was calculated when he went into custody by the Bureau of Prisons was insufficient time.
Well,
did
you try to develop that at all in the district court? Did you try to develop that and suggest that because of the way the sentence was written, therefore he was found ineligible because he didn't have sufficient
time? No, I didn't.
Any reason why you didn't develop that?
At the time, it didn't seem important. In retrospect, it clearly is. But the bottom line is that he served 9.5 months, which is more than he would have under the guidelines, and we focused all on the written sentence, but the intent of the sentence was to send him to Butner, and that's the problem.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Case just argued is ordered submitted. Neary versus Lighty. I hope I'm not mispronouncing that.
Good morning, Your Honor. Your Honors. Bruce Lichty, appearing for appellant. With the brief time that I have,